Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, this is Justin Timberlake.
Hey, 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 this is Ashanti.
What up, it's Jay-Z.
Hey, this is Jennifer Lopez.
Yeah, what's cracking, y'all? It's your boy Fabulous.
This is Ludacris.
Hey, what's up, it's your man 50 Cent.
Hi, this is Christina Aguilera, and you're listening to...
Internet, Brown Sugar Radio, and we have an exclusive guest this evening as we kick off the month of breast cancer awareness for October. We have the one and only Tina M. Pfeiffer, but before I bring her live, I would like to introduce to some and present to others Tina, who is my personal physician that I have been going to for many years. Tina excels at work and just has an incredible background. She graduated here with an undergraduate degree from UNLV, and then she advanced, with her nurse degree at UCLA Harbor in Los Angeles. The wonderful thing about Tina is that she's also a partner, all right, with various physicians with Women's Specialty Care here in Las Vegas, one of the largest private practices in OBGYN. I want to give it up tonight for my personal, wonderful physician who I love so dearly, and I thank for coming on the show tonight. Tina, welcome to Brown Sugar Radio.
Thank you, Kim. Thank you. After that, I don't know what to say. Wow, okay. That was quite the introduction.
Oh, girl, well, we're awesome. Just so awesome to have you. I mean, just excited. We welcome all of our listeners in with a round of applause.
Thank you.
Okay. And so what I'd like to do, okay, we cut off here on Brown Sugar Radio. My listeners know as they're coming in through the chat, I want to say thank you, all of you, for joining us this evening. Those of you listening to the archive segment definitely are in for a knowledgeable, night, just learning the awareness of breast cancer. And so, Tina, what I'd like to do is to certainly, if we can go back, and you share with us, what was it that made you decide to become a physician and to help women?
Okay. So, Kim, first, let's see. Tina, I am a nurse practitioner, not a physician.
Okay.
Yep. And I know many of my patients, including you, call me their doctor. And I know
I go to Dr. Tina, okay?
That's
APN Clinical Administrator.
That's right.
So and please clarify that for me, because I call you Dr. Tina.
I know you do, and many do, and I appreciate that, but I am an advanced practice nurse. That's what that APN stands for. So it's a nurse that has advanced her practice past the RN as registered nurse, which many people are familiar with, and then into nurse practitioner or midwives, women that deliver babies. So I am an advanced practice nurse, so I am a nurse practitioner.
All right, now, that's right. We're not trying to get sued tonight, okay? You got to make it right. Girl, you know I'm a fool.
All right, but I
always say that's my doctor right there. That's Dr. Tina.
That's right.
But certainly we want to make sure we represent that properly on behalf of Women's Specialty Care tonight. And so, with you working so hard in the industry, I know that with health care, certainly with all the changes that Obama's making, for women to be able to go to the doctor, not just women, I shouldn't say just women, was for people, to go to the doctor and things. I think there's a lot of great movements happening. But certainly tonight's focus is on breast cancer awareness. But I would like to also get into, if we have time tonight, just as a whole, the importance of taking care of your body.
Right.
I know you see it a lot you know, and you can tell bodies that have probably been neglected or not well taken care of or not following through properly. As a nurse, I know you see a lot. And I just wanted to bring it to the forefront tonight so that we can educate the listeners on the importance of going to the doctor and not being so scary, you know, to make that appointment.
Right, and I appreciate that. And it is a privilege to be able to talk on like a grassroots radio that's reaching our local listeners and beyond, obviously. So to have that opportunity to talk to women to kind of alleviate some of those myths or those fears or some women that think they don't need to go to the doctor anymore because they've already had their babies, things like that. There's a lot of things out there that I hear women, you know, repeat to me when you get into my office as to why they have neglected. And a lot of it's because they're crazy busy, they're raising families, they got busy careers, and their personal wellness kind of gets put on third and fourth steps. But it's
that's
time
true.
To bring us back up to the first step, because if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of everybody else. So that's
mm-hmm.
the most important thing. So with October
you're right.
being obviously Breast Awareness Month, we will focus obviously on the breasts. It's not the only thing that defines us as women, but yes, it's important to talk about breast care
absolutely.
And health. We'll also talk about other health screenings that are important as we age, and obviously our risks for everything increase as we age. So that's why you hear people talk about it as we reach our 30s and 40s. So, so absolutely. So Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Really want to make sure that I get through some of the information for you, for your listeners. Like you said, I want to talk about screenings and risk factors, some of the treatment. I'm not an oncologist, so I won't get too deep into treatments, but at least I think it'll dispel some of the fears out there about it. So.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, certainly one of my first questions are, what are some of the symptoms that would alarm us, you know, to go to the doctor for breast cancer?
Okay. The main thing is to hope that you recognize symptoms, and that's the thing about women, and we talk about breast exams. That's really all a breast exam is for you to be aware that your breasts have changed in whatever capacity is not normal for you. For example, some women have one breast is slightly smaller than the other, then all of a sudden if that breast were to catch up to the same size as the other, that's a symptom that's different. Does that necessarily mean cancer?
Right.
No, but it's something you need to report to your doctor. Say, all of a sudden this breast looks bigger or it looks smaller. Something's different. So that's one symptom. The most common you're going to hear with women that get concerned or scared is a lump, so a mass, something hard in the breast that seems unusual. That's obvious,
uh-huh.
but you won't be you'd be surprised how women ignore that. They'll just assume it's going to go away, or they're fearful of what it is, as ignorance will not, you know, proceed into something else, but it does. So obviously anything hard like a rock inside the breast area that typically doesn't move, doesn't matter if it's tender or non-tender, it's a change, and that's a symptom of a breast cancer. Doesn't mean it's benign or malignant. We don't even know that yet, but that's an obvious symptom. Another symptom would be something leaking out of your breast. Now, obviously we have breasts made to breastfeed infants. So if we squeeze them hard enough, just like any type of cow, and I hate to give that analogy, but yes, if we squeeze them hard enough, we're typically going to get something out of them. But if you get a discharge out of your nipple without squeezing it, that's a symptom.
Mm.
So
okay.
if you wake up in the morning, there's something in your bra, or you lift your arm in the shower and you see something leaking out of your breast, even if it's a small amount, it doesn't matter whether it's bloody, yellow, green. If it's something that should not be there at that point, and you are not breastfeeding a baby or you're not pregnant, that's a concern. So that's something you report to your doctor. Another one that typically can kind of go ignored is a change in the skin texture. A woman may feel her breast and the skin looks a little different, but she doesn't feel a lump or mass underneath it, so she kind of reassures herself that maybe this is okay. Well, it's not. A change in skin texture for no known reason, meaning you weren't sitting in the sun and got a sunburn, or you didn't bruise yourself, that's a cause. Something underneath is causing that change in the skin. So we want to investigate that. Okay. Most breast lumps aren't cancer. 80% of them aren't cancer. Many of them are what we call fibrocystic changes in the breast. But again, we don't want you making that decision as the patient or as the woman or as the sister or the mother, or getting on the internet and trying to diagnose yourself. We need someone to lay hands on you, look at you, review your history, and then get some imaging, you know, mammograms, ultrasounds to really define what are we looking at, and then give you an educated reassurance that this is what we're dealing with.
Absolutely. And now when Nurse Tina says lay hands, she's not talking about at the sanctuary in the pulpit. She's saying go to the doctor too, y'all, okay? I know how we think sometimes. You know what I mean? Let me clarify that.
There
right?
you go, exactly.
Jesus just works, but we so need to have a doctor's opinion as well. So
Absolutely.
Okay, Tina, go ahead.
So the other thing we wanted to talk about, too, are some of the screening methods we have out there. So when you go to the doctor, what can you anticipate is going to give you some information of maybe what your risk is or should you be worried? So the most obvious one I think that most of us are aware of are mammograms. So mammogram is an X-ray, basically, of our breast. And right now the recommendation is to start it at 40 and then annually after that. So every year after age 40, we should be getting mammograms of our breast. And what that mammogram will do is show us any density or any lump or mass that's in the breast. And then from that point, if they identify anything, then they can go on for other diagnostic reasons. So they haven't diagnosed it, but they see something that looks suspicious. So that's the main thing. That's why it's called a screening. And then after that, for younger women that are age younger than 40, then we usually use ultrasounds. And the difference between the two, an ultrasound will give us a better picture of a woman who has a denser breast because she's younger than 40. Typically, your breasts are a little more perky, so, of course, mammograms may not give such a good picture. So we'll use ultrasounds to help screen women under 40. There's also Halo. Now, Halo is somewhat new, so many women may not have heard of it. And what that does is it actually gives us a sample of nipple aspirate. So like I said, our breasts are here to breastfeed. So we have ducts that produce milk and other cells. So if we massage it a certain way with a certain equipment, we can get a very tiny amount of liquid out of those breasts and then send that for screening and identify if there's any abnormal cells in it. The good thing about the Halo is the point that those cells, if they're identified abnormal, that's before there's even a mass present, a lump present. So that's 8 to 7 years before a mammogram would pick up anything when you,
wow,
you know, receive that test. So that's
awesome.
What's great about the Halo, yeah. So that's really changed the world of screening for our risk factors. So that's huge. And that's been out probably locally. You can get a Halo done over the past 3 or 4 years. So
wow,
that's a huge step in technology for screening for breast cancer. Yeah.
Absolutely, because that could save, you know, years, you know, of therapy and treatments and, you know, not only just your health, but you figure if this is catching something that hasn't even developed yet, imagine
right,
the cost you would also save with health care expenses. And I think that is one of the fears in addition to just being busy, but a lot of women don't want to go because they feel like they can't afford to go to the doctor, you know?
Absolutely. And everything does cost. I mean, there's not much that's free in healthcare. We know that. But economically, the cost for, like, mammograms and Halos really aren't cost prohibitive. But it really depends on your family. $50 to one family may not be such a big deal, but $50 to other may be a week's worth of groceries. So we have to be cognizant
Absolutely.
Of that, too. So
Absolutely.
Mammograms will typically cost around $80 to have that
okay.
done. And Halo costs about the same. Now, one does not replace the other. Go
does,
ahead.
Isn't that covered, though, through most people's insurance?
Mammograms
and Halo?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Mammograms are typically covered with most insurances. Now, I can't claim all because insurances change, you know, rapidly on what they will cover. But Halo typically is not covered by insurances. And again, we have to decide as women what we prioritize. Yes, it's $80 or thereabout, depending on where you obtain it. But again, it's like, well, do I want to skip Starbucks 3 times this month so I can get my Halo or maybe not get my nails done every 2 weeks and get my Halo? So we have to shift our priority too and realize what's important. And if, you know, fronting up some money that I really can sacrifice in other areas just for this, for my health, then I encourage everybody to do it.
That's true. Now, I have a gentleman that's in the chat room, interestingly enough, and he sent me a message asking about men and breast mm-hmm. cancer. I want to clarify that not only women receive breast cancer, correct? Men can also
Absolutely.
Receive it.
Absolutely. I hate to say receive, huh? It's not too welcoming,
right?
But yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
No,
but,
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Men can absolutely be diagnosed with breast cancer. And personally, I do have someone in my family that was male that died of breast cancer. So, Yes, men have breast tissue. Now, they're at lower risk because they don't have as much breast tissue. But it doesn't mean that they don't get breast cancer. So when we're talking about family history and you're inquiring in your family history, we shouldn't ignore the men. Now, back in the day, and I'll say back in the day 10 or 20 years ago, most men probably would not relay that information to their family that the ultimate cause of their death or the preceding cause of death was breast cancer. They're not really going to share that because it doesn't sound too masculine, and who knows, men have breast cancer. Well, obviously, those of us professionals in the medical community know that, but the layperson, your sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles, it doesn't make sense at first, but once you realize, yes, they have breasts. So, yes, it's a cellular level. That's where it starts. So men definitely need to pay attention to their chest wall. They don't want to call them breasts. That's fine. But the same symptoms that I talked about with women, lumps, discharge out of the nipples, change in the skin, any of that is cause for them to go to their doctor and get an exam. Now, can they do a mammogram on a man? No, there's not enough tissue to grab. But there's MRIs and imaging they can do on a man to get the same imaging, if not better imaging.
Wow. Okay, that's how they do it. I was going to ask you that. Well, how would they, perform, a screening on
absolutely.
Men? Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Very easy.
Mhm. And would you say that it's more common, predominantly in one race versus another, or is this just across the board?
It's really across the board. You have a 1 in 8 chance of getting breast cancer, so it's pretty, unfortunately, good odds that one of us will end up with breast cancer over the age of 50. Okay, all our risk increase after we age. That's just a matter of fact. That's with any cancer. Now, where you see a difference, though, is you see a difference with survival rates. Caucasian women's survival rate is 90%, and we're talking 5-year survival rates. But African American women is 76%. So why is there such a discrepancy in our survival rate? It's because of our access to care. And that's known and that's proven. So radio shows or, segments on TV, anything that can get awareness out to women of all kinds, but obviously African-American women, for early detection, paying attention to your body, getting to the doctor for early detection, that's the only thing that improves your survival rate, is we need to catch the cancer early. We can't catch it once it's already metastasized or spread to other vital organs in your body. That decreases, obviously, your lifespan. So that's a, kind of an unfortunate statistic that lies in the African-American community. The other are risk factors. African-American women tend to be our higher obese rate. So BMIs that are over 30, that means body mass index, your height versus your weight. Women that smoke, increased risk for breast cancer. Obviously, a family history does set you up for possibly a genetic link, but that's more rare than just you're at risk regardless if you have a family history or not. And unfortunately, having to deliver that bad news to some women that had no family history, that was kind of their comfort level of knowing, well, I don't have family history of breast cancer. So does that mean ignore your body? Does that mean don't get checked? That means breast cancer is going to start somewhere, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I hate
that's
to
amazing.
Have to start with you, but yeah.
So you're saying that majority of, what's the proper way to word this, because I don't want to say it wrong, but you would indicate that most of the cases that have been researched that, women have been diagnosed with breast cancer, it was hereditary? Am I understanding you correctly?
No, right. It's the opposite. The incidence of breast cancer is less, 70% do not have a family history.
Oh,
does that make
okay.
sense? 70% right.
do not
have a family history. And exactly.
Oh, wow.
No, it's the opposite. So you got about, you have less than about 20% that have a family history where there's a genetic link.
Wow.
But when you do have that genetic link, that's what really increases the odds that, yes, you may indeed have a 60 to 75% chance of getting breast cancer. So that's kind of huge. But again, 70% that are diagnosed don't have a family history anywhere. So that's
that
huge.
That is crazy. Yeah,
and that's why they're
okay,
linking, yeah.
Okay, I misunderstood you.
That's all right. So hopefully we clarified it for the listeners, too. And that's why when yourself or any patient comes into my room, yes, I want your family history, but I also want you to be aware of your own body and not ignore it and feel falsely reassured because your grandmother or your mother didn't have breast cancer.
That is amazing. Well, I'll tell you, this is why tonight I'm so excited that you're here on the show, because it's a lot of myths that are tied to breast cancer, and I just find that every year they're continually doing more research. You know, we have various foundations for the breast cancer awareness, and they're, you know, I just think that, you know, knowledge is key. This is something that's preventable. It's not like you just wake up and you got 6 weeks to live. I mean, if you're on top of your breast self-examinations and, you know, you're making sure you're communicating properly with your doctor or with your nurse or, what you know, whoever your caregiver is, it's important to, you know, to share what's going on in your body and don't ignore some of the telltale signs that Tina was sharing with us tonight. And I want to ask you this now. Because I have a daughter who's 11 years old, and, you know, at that age they're starting to go through puberty and they're beginning to develop their breasts. Do you feel that, like right now at 11 years old, that is a good time to begin to teach her about, you know, herself breast examinations? Or is it something that maybe when she gets older she should do more regularly, like maybe 15, 16?
Right. Well, and let's clarify, we want her to be aware of her body. So do we want her to focus just on the breasts and how they feel and how they may change? Not particularly, because when we're going through puberty and really adolescence in general, all the way up to about 19, the breasts are continually developing and changing. So they're kind of morphing, and they may feel different to touch at different times in that time period of adolescence. So you want her to be aware of her body and what's expected. The breasts are going to bud, and then, yes, they're going to enlarge to some degree and maybe smaller than other women you see out there, bigger than other women out there, especially for women of any ethnicity, that they're aware of what color their breasts should be. And that sounds funny, but I had a patient early in my career who was a Hispanic woman, a young girl, and she thought something was definitely wrong with her breast. And so I said, okay, let's, you know, take off the bra and let's get the examination. I'm looking at her breast. Everything looks normal. I said, well, why don't you point out to me what you feel is abnormal? And she pointed to her nipple and said, the color is wrong. And her color is because she's of some ethnicity. They were brown and a dark brown. But what she had seen in health class for all her years in school and her mother maybe not explaining it correctly, she saw pink nipples. Because every image you saw in health class were Caucasian examples of what the breast or any other part of the body was to represent everyone. Yeah, so since her nipples weren't pink, she thought something was wrong with her nipples. So I had to explain to her, this is totally normal. This is your normal pigmentation. Nothing is wrong with you. And so it really made me think about just our education in general and being not so specific to one race and showing other ethnicities in health class and as women to our daughters to explain what's normal for us. This is our family. This is what looks normal. We're brown, we're yellow, whatever we are, and this is what's normal for us. So we don't give, again, just that falsehood that she thought something was wrong with her. I'm glad she paid attention, but she thought something was wrong because of the pictures that had been presented to her during health classes. So that's part of it, too.
Yeah. Wow.
So as far as true, say, breast exams, and this means leaving out any concerns or issues, meaning there's nothing wrong with the young woman's breasts. If she's an adolescent, we really don't start formal breast exams till about the age 19, 20.
Okay.
But if there's something obvious wrong, if she has pain in her breast or there's a lump in the breast, it doesn't matter what age you are, then, yes, you need to get examined. So that's why I say they need to have body awareness and know what's normal, but to have them sit down on the bed or in the shower and doing a formal hands-on type of exam isn't always the best because their breasts are changing so much.
Okay. All right. And so thank you for that information. Another common myth that I'd like to get clarity on tonight, Tina, is the fact that lumps can only be found in the breast. And I notice when I come to the office and when I get my examinations, you often check underneath the armpit. Can you give some more information as to why it's important to check under our arms as well, not only the breast tissue?
Absolutely. Well, you answered it right there, is because you check the breast tissue. And the breast tissue extends up into the armpit. And it extends up, if you picture where a bra strap goes up onto your shoulder, it also extends partially to the front side of your shoulder. So your exam should include everywhere your bra touches, and that means even center chest, so not alleviating the area in the middle of your breast. So not just the mounds, and that's how I try to explain it to patients. Just don't examine the mounds of the breast and the chest wall. Under your arm, there's some breast tissue, and on the upper part of your shoulder, there's breast tissue. So you want to do a complete exam and feeling for that. Now, one of the common complaints is typically if you do get a lump under your arm, it's tender. A lot of women come in with that complaint. Typically, and this isn't all the time, but obviously, typically there's lymph nodes that run through our underarm area. And a lymph node in the lymph system in our body is a drainage system. It's a natural drainage system for our body. And so when this system is activated, meaning it's having to drain toxins or infection, like if we had a head cold or the flu, they drain through this system. And so sometimes they get clogged because they're draining so much. And sometimes that's when women will experience a little lump in their arm. It's usually tender, but it shouldn't last more than 2 weeks. So that's another kind of one that's kind of a gray area for women. But definitely still, if it's over 2 weeks, you need to come in and be reassured or get some imaging that it indeed is just a lymph node that may be a little swollen because you've been sick.
Right, that's true. Mm-hmm. And I actually had experienced that, I believe, one time. I think I called you. I was like, see, the girl's come wrong with my arm, big girl. You better check this out.
And that's what I like.
No, I have no fear calling her, okay?
That's right. And we'd rather you call than not call, trust me.
Right. And so I appreciate that. And you monitored it for me, and everything was good. You know, this is so funny because I have a chat full of men this evening. Where are my lady listeners this evening?
But that's okay. They can talk. They got moms and sisters and wives and daughters, and they can relate the same information.
This is true. This is very true. Thank you so much. All my loyal listeners that are out there tonight, Golga 14, Mr. Magic, and then all of the Facebook listeners that are tuning in tonight, and learning all of this very informative information. I want to say thank you so much for joining us tonight. As, Tina educates us on the importance of making sure that we get our regular exams. And, you know, one thing that I love the fact that we have seemed to come together, you know, as a nation with just really focusing on the importance of breast cancer awareness. And I love the fact every single October we dedicate that entire month, you know, for breast cancer awareness. And that's why I wanted to kick the show off with the first show in October. And I couldn't have no one else do this, but I call her Dr. Tina, y'all, but I don't want to get in trouble. It's APN, okay?
Okay, y'all have the board looking for me.
Sure, I'll be like, that's my doctor.
It's all good.
She's so down to earth, and you know, one thing about Tina is that she takes her time. You know, she will explain to you any questions. The one thing you taught me when I first went to visit you at your office, you said there's no such thing as a dumb question, and I remember that, you know, and I remember thinking like, oh, gosh, I don't want to ask her this. This may sound silly, but, I mean, you were just so understanding, and, you know, that's one thing that really drew me to you, and I've been seeing you for like 6 years, you know, after I had my daughter, you know, she helped me during my pregnancy with all my checkups and everything with my last child, and, you know, I've been going to her ever since. And I just want to say, you know, I think it's so important for women and men, but the only reason I'm focusing on women is because the clinic, I want to say the clinic, I keep saying the clinic, but
okay.
where the women's specialty care is developed, it's a specialty clinic for OBGYN, and that's why we're primarily focusing on women tonight. But as a whole,
right,
it's important for anyone to make sure that you go and get your regular checkups and your exams. And so, Tina, now what I'd like to get into a little bit of the show, because I know that you have to get going here shortly, just real quick, if you can kind of share with us as far as the importance, not just the breasts, but getting your regular paps, you know, even for the men in the room, you know, maybe getting your prostate check.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Overall, health care, please, I want you to stress the importance of going to the doctor and not being afraid.
Right, absolutely. And I think the main part is having a relationship with your provider. So whether it's a physician or nurse practitioner or physician assistant, you need to get with someone that you're comfortable with. So sometimes you do have to shop around. And remember, you're paying for this service, so you want someone who is going to listen to you and who's familiar with what you're going for. So if it's OBGYN care you need, then you obviously would prefer to go to an OBGYN. If it's common ailments or just general screenings, then a family practice doctor can help you with that, or pediatricians for your children. So you want to make sure you're going to the right provider for the right care, and then that you relate to that person
on a level that you trust them and they trust you, because I've got to trust my patient to relay information to me so I can make a sound judgment, and then we can come together with a treatment plan. You don't always have to agree with your provider's treatment plan. And that's one thing I think everybody needs to understand with that. If you are diagnosed with something, that you talk about the treatments available, and then you decide what's best for you, because your provider should be able to give you the pros and cons of that. So
right.
Hopefully you don't get to something that you have to diagnose, and we're talking about preventative health, like you said. So preventative health and breast cancer awareness is awesome. You're absolutely right. We need to pay attention to it. But the number one killer is heart disease. And especially in African Americans, that's where we do lead the pack. Unfortunately, we have to be number one in something. Heart disease is it. So we want to make sure that we're paying attention to our cardiac health. Number one is weight. We have got to keep a normal weight and for your height and weight. So I can't tell you what the normal weight is unless I knew what your height was. But that's
okay.
Something you want to make sure you're paying attention to. Now, routine recommended screenings. And we'll kind of go over 40 because really in your 30s, you're pretty much cruising along unless you have a chronic disease that was diagnosed earlier. But if you're a normal, healthy male or female, one of your screenings is your blood pressure check. As simple and as routine as that one thing seems, every time you go to a doctor, they're taking your blood pressure. It's huge. It's huge. It is a vital statistic for a reason. We need to know what your blood pressure is. And if that blood pressure is elevated three times in a row, meaning three different visits to three different providers or the same provider, then that's when we get into the diagnosis of hypertension or high blood pressure. So that's why the blood pressure is really important to monitor. So pretty much everybody gets that if they even get to a provider. And then second, obviously, with women is your pap smear, your annual pap smear. Now, when does that start is always the question. I have many moms that come in and they have 13-year-olds or 15-year-olds and want to get them a pap smear. Pap smear is screened for cervical cancer. And pap smear is one of the most successful screenings worldwide. When they instituted the pap smear, it saved millions of lives. So it is huge to make sure it's conducted, but there is a starting point of it. Pap smears do not need to be conducted on a young woman or woman who is not sexually active. Once she becomes sexually active, then she is, if you want to say, a candidate to have a pap smear. And why? Because sex in itself is the risk for cervical cancer, because it provides an opportunity for the virus, human papillomavirus, which we abbreviate with HPV, which some listeners may know about or not. And we can talk about that later. But the act of sex puts us at risk of obtaining HPV, which then puts us at risk for cervical cancer. So that's the reason that a young girl at 15 who is not sexually active does not need a pap smear yet. Now, when do we start it if you're never sexually active? Well, if you haven't been sexually active, we'll usually start at age 21. Okay. If you haven't. And because at that point, and I hate to say this, is we really want to make sure that we're getting a good report from the patient what they define as sex, possibly, and if we have same-sex relationships. So at 21, there are some rare instances. 90% of cancers are cervical cancers caused by HPV. So we still have the 10% that are incidental out there that may not be caused by that virus. So that's where you capture those if you started at about age 21 for women that have not been sexually active.
Okay.
And then obviously, go ahead.
I was going to ask you real quick. Speaking of the HPV virus, there has been a shot, and I forgot what is the name of it. Is it just the HPV shot, or
HPV vaccine? Right,
yes.
HPV vaccine. And there's a couple of companies.
I was going to ask you real quick, Tina, and then please finish. Why is it that you can only give it to women that are 26 and younger?
Okay, good question. The HPV vaccine is provided by two companies, and so it's branded under their particular names, but it doesn't matter who you get it from. The vaccine is now for male and female. It did start and hit the industry medical world about 2 years ago when we started vaccinating, and you'll hear me say the Gardasil vaccine, and that's one of the brand names for it. And why they started between age 9 and 26 for young women was the original candidates for this vaccine is because you're trying to vaccinate women before they become sexually active.
And you want
okay.
a couple of years, just like any vaccine, to obviously give the vaccine time to build up antibodies against that virus that might present itself in a couple of years. So that's the main reason for it. Absolutely.
Okay. That makes
right.
sense. Okay.
So it gives you time to build up your immunity.
Okay. And so when do they start giving that? It's from 26 to what?
It's from age 9 to 26.
Oh,
and
Lord.
That's,
yeah, them
exactly. Well, you got to consider it. We have to think of it as any other vaccine. We vaccinate our kids against chickenpox. We vaccinate them against meningitis. So
that's
it's
true.
Just got to think of it as a vaccine. And so
many
women, like you're talking about Miss, many women had an issue when the vaccine first came out saying, well, I don't want to vaccinate my 12-year-old because now it's going to tell her she has permission to go have sex. Well, I don't know how that crosses the line. I don't see the correlation of it. It's
yeah.
not a permission to have sex. It's vaccinating your daughter, or now your sons also, against a virus that can cause cancer. So
true.
That's all it is. Right.
True. That's true. I think I was more so thinking, and Tina, certainly, I know you got to get going here, but I was more so thinking along the lines of at 9 years old and vaccinating them with isn't it like a part of the virus, right, an STD?
It's actually not a live virus that you're vaccinating with, no. Not at all.
Okay.
And so that's a good question. Are they putting something into my body that my body then has
right.
to try and fight, and if it can't fight it, then I have the virus? Not at all.
Okay.
No,
that's what I was thinking, like, wait, right. I don't want her to have to go through all that now. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
okay.
right. And I'm not
it's not like a flu shot or any of that other stuff they got going on. This is different.
Exactly.
Okay.
There are other vaccines, though, and I can't speak on them exactly on how they developed them, but there's two vaccines that actually do have live viruses that we've been vaccinating for over 20 years, and there's been no problem. So, and I wish I could remember which two they are, but, again, there are certain researchers and immunologists that have developed a mutation of a virus that they can vaccinate us with. And safely vaccinate us with. That means your body has now been exposed to the virus and it fights it off at that point. So there are a couple out there, but HPV or Gardasil is not one of them.
Okay. That's what I wanted to kind of get clarity on.
Okay.
You know, just trying to find out how does that work when they're 9 years old, you know, and would that cause an outbreak? Because I was told now, if I'm not mistaken, is the HPV virus genital warts? Or am I misconstruing that?
No, good question. HPV has hundreds of strains and can present in different ways, but the two most common ways it's going to present, number one is genital warts. Now, that's considered in our world in the medical field as a lower-risk virus, genital warts. A higher-risk virus is the one that can predispose women to cervical cancer. So obviously that's one we're more worried about. But you get vaccinated against many of the most common strains that can cause both of those. Genital warts is not going to cause a life-threatening situation. However, there's not many women I think are going to raise their hand and say, that's okay, give me genital warts.
Right.
I don't mind. Okay,
yeah,
so
that's
right.
Okay, I don't want
right,
that.
So if you can vaccinate me against that, right, I don't want
yeah.
that. So, yes, give me the vaccine. So.
Okay. Tina, we do have a caller on the line, and then I know you got to go here. I would
okay.
like to take a call. This is actually one of our listeners in the chat room here. Is this Mr. Magic?
Hey, how you doing, Sugar? Yes, it's Mr.
Hey, Mr.
Magic.
He's calling from Atlanta, Tina.
Hello.
Yeah,
one of my loyal listeners. Okay, you had a question for my nurse here.
Yes, I do. Okay, me and my friend who was talking earlier about ED, all right, I'm like 28, 29 years old. I know I'm not thinking about it right now, but what are like some early signs for like ED for men?
Okay. Erectile dysfunction. So it's not my specialty, but I'm going to give you my understanding of some of the early signs.
Okay.
Basically, erectile dysfunction, abbreviated ED for most, is when you cannot get aroused or get a firm erection when spontaneously desired. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Is that your understanding
Correct.
Of it? Okay. So any symptom is when you can't do that, when there's a prolonged delay or you cannot reach a full erection or the erection doesn't last long enough. Not premature ejaculation, that's different, but when an ejaculation doesn't last long enough. And say long enough, whose definition is that? And there probably is
right.
a criteria. I'm not aware of how long they want to say is normal. Is it 10 minutes? Is it 12 minutes? It's a pretty short time, honestly, but it's in that realm.
Okay. Okay. So
now,
so
things
like
that can – go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, I was saying, is there, like, any, like, signs or anything? Like, if you wake up in the morning, you don't get that morning wood or something?
Absolutely. That is actually one of them. If you typically, and many men and young men out there that wake up and they basically feel like the penis is hard or have an erection to some degree, that's basically normal. That's vascular constriction in the penis. So if you don't have that, yeah, all it is there is a vascular reason why you're not getting an erection. The blood supply is not getting to the penis. So
okay.
those veins aren't dilating. Now, will there be any urinary changes or anything like that? Not that I'm aware of. It's not like the prostate symptoms, so it's different. So typically, it's most men are just going to complain that, you know, I want to have sex and I can't get aroused. I can't get my penis erect when I need it erect, and that's usually the number one complaint.
Cool. I got you.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm glad you had the courage to ask that, Mr. Magic. A lot of people want to ask that. Okay.
And also, you want to make sure when we talk about what can cause ED for men out there is smoking marijuana. So many things out there that we may be doing normally, alcohol can cause ED. Yeah, excessive intake of alcohol. So. You don't do that often. Think about the things you're doing that may be causing a temporary issue of erectile dysfunction. It may be too much alcohol. It may be because you're smoking. It may be marijuana. So those are a couple of things to pay attention to.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks for your question.
All right. Wow.
All right.
I'm tripping over the marijuana thing now. All right.
That's a whole nother show.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a whole other show. Bye.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Magic.
Bye.
Okay. All right, Tina. Well, go ahead and give out your links where anyone can contact you as far as Women's Specialty Care's website, if you're on Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff.
Okay. Well, we do have our practice, Women's Specialty Care, we do have a website. So it's womensspecialtycare.com. So really easy, all lowercase, all spread together. And I also do have a Twitter account. So I'm fairly new to Twitter, but I am trying to put words of wisdom out there and tips. It's TP Talk. So T is in Tina and P is in Paul. Talk, T-A-L-K, at Twitter. So those are
Tina, we
my
got
links.
One more call. Can you take one more call before you
certainly,
go?
Certainly,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Okay. 240, you're on the air with Brown Sugar Radio. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
This is Mike from Silver Spring, Maryland.
Maryland, hey. We all the way on the East Coast tonight, huh?
Yeah.
Hi, Mike. What question did you have for Tina this evening? Thanks for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a couple of questions. I was saying for a heart attack, what pills are good for taking, what are, like, heart problems or so, if you have, like, to prevent if it can prevent cholesterol or so, hopefully I'm asking that right.
Okay, so what you're asking is what can you do to prevent to have heart disease which may lead to a heart attack?
Yeah.
Is that the question?
Because, I mean, I try not to eat a lot of fatty foods, but sometimes even though they can be tasty, but I usually try to eat, like, baked or grilled food or so.
Right. Well, you're on the right track, and that's exactly what you should be doing. It's more prevention, like you're talking about, our diet and exercise versus taking a pill that's going to help. Now, if we want to talk about keeping our bloods in, so as we get older, and this is typically over 40 that they'll recommend taking a baby aspirin, which is 81 milligrams of just plain aspirin a day, that's the only thing that's preventative. But that's usually with your doctor's advice and usually with anyone over 40. But younger than 40, which you sound a lot younger than that, so younger than 40, it is diet and exercise. And we talk about diet, you hit it on the head, is we want to decrease our fat intake. It doesn't mean eliminate it because, yes, we need fats in our body to metabolize other nutrients. So we need fats, but they need to be healthy fats. And so any processed food, stuff that's ready right there when you need it, usually has a lot of fat and sodium in it. So that's something you want to avoid. And usually a tip I'll tell people when they're shopping, which doesn't sound like you need it because you're eating the right stuff, is if you shop the perimeter of your grocery store, so the outside So your produce, your dairy, your meat sections, that's where all the fresher food is, obviously, and that's where your healthier food is. The food that's in the middle where the chips are and the candy are and the cookies are, those are all in the middle aisles. So if you can avoid those or send it to the last, that's where you increase your healthy diet and your just your thought process. If I need to eat leaner meat, chicken, fish, yes, beef's okay, but do you want it to be three meals of the week to be beef? No, you don't. Because,
oh, no, I mean, I don't eat. The thing is, I don't eat, like, I try to, like, for example, red meat, I try to usually eat, like, maybe, like, once or twice a week or so. But usually I try to eat, like, some chicken and fruits, of course, and vegetables.
Right.
But it's just, I was just wondering, on another note also, what, if it, like, for, excuse me, for, sorry, I lost my voice there for a minute. Is it, like, for, like, heart, you know, heart problems or so, like, what, for the aspirin and stuff? That's what I was, like,
right.
It was kind of like two questions.
That's all right. And really, that's the only thing that there is actually preventative other than being diagnosed with a disease process. So if you had plaque on your veins and you're already diagnosed, which is typically in the older population, when I say older, we're hitting our 40s and 50s and beyond that, where there may be plaque buildup in your arteries and veins already, and that comes from a poor diet previously. So when we talk about high cholesterol and stuff like that. So, yes, there are pills if you have high cholesterol or you already have plaque in your veins that they can give. I can't rattle them off or have them, you know, I don't have them at the tip of my tongue to say which ones they are. But absolutely, if someone's been diagnosed with that, there are pills that can help eliminate that process and increase your chances of not having a heart attack from that. But the main thing is to start off with like you're doing now and have a good diet and get some exercise. Always more vegetables than protein on your plate, which means more veggies and fruit than meat.
Okay. Well, I know they said fruit's good, but it's like they say fruit is, you know, it's not good to eat a lot of fruit. I know they said for your teeth and or so, or because it's like acid or so.
Depends on what fruit you're talking about, absolutely. And remember, any diet is a well-balanced diet. That's what you want. You don't want to do too much of anything because then you're not getting your balance of nutrients. So you do mix up your fruits. And typically the best thing, especially living on the East Coast, you guys have more options than we do here in Las Vegas living in the desert, is you eat what's grown in your local area. So when it's growing, so typically those are the things that are on sale. So if tomatoes or peaches are in season, they're going to be on sale. So that's what you eat then. And then guess what? In a couple of months, they're not going to be in season anymore. So you eat the next thing. So whether it's avocados and, you know, apples, those are in season. So that's what you eat. So people that have the privilege of having true farmers markets and having food that's grown in their region, that's what you should be eating.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
I was saying, but does, like, aspirin and Bufferin and all those pills, do they lower heart, like, problems or so, or lower the risk?
Yeah, they lower the incidence of heart rate, they do, of heart attacks.
So it is.
They
true.
Do.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering about that. I heard that if you take an aspirin a day, it lowers heart attacks. Thank you so much, Mike.
Right.
I've kept Tina well beyond the time that I asked her for, but I do appreciate you calling in and supporting Brown Sugar Radio as well as Tina Pfeiffer tonight from Women's Specialty Care. So thank you so much for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks,
you're welcome.
Mike.
Right. Okay. All right, Tina. Well, I'm going to go ahead. I know you got things to do, and I apologize keeping you a few minutes past the designated time, but I figured we'd get some callers.
No,
so
absolutely.
And you know, it's informative, and I love the fact that the men are stepping forward tonight, and they're not afraid to call and ask questions, you know, that a lot of men probably are concerned with as far as heart disease, you know, and, you know, just other sexual dysfunctions and things that they may be afraid to ask, you know what I'm saying, their friends or
right.
whatever. So it's good that you're educating them tonight, and I just want to say thank you for that, Tina. So definitely we'd love to have you back, you know, maybe in another 6 months or so, and we can do another show on health care. And you know, I know that it's continually changing. That's what I love the most, that you're so informative, and women's specialty care is constantly on top of the latest technologies and the newest information to help improve, you know, health care for their patients. And so that's one thing I truly respect about you guys. So, Tina, thank you once again for coming through tonight on Brown Sugar Radio and helping my listeners out. So it meant a lot to me.
Well, thank you for asking me to come, and I'll come back anytime. So thank you so much for having this radio show. I love it. It's great. So I'll be back anytime you want me.
Yay. All right.
Okay.
We didn't scare you off keeping you late, huh?
No,
okay.
Not at all.
All right. Good. All right,
okay,
Tina. Well, like I said, what I'd like to do is have all the listeners, I'm going to put her link in the chat room for Women's Specialty Care. And you guys, for those of you who are local here in Vegas, you can check her out. The hours of operation are Monday through Friday. What is it, Tina? Is it 8 to 5? Or
it's 8 to 5.
8 to 5. All right. You can
mm-hmm.
check Tina out there. Tina, thank you, and God bless you. And, you know, just like I said, keep in touch with me. We will certainly do another show soon.
Definitely. God bless you all. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you. Okay, so there it is there. We had Tina tonight, and the men came through. The men came through this evening, and I think that it's a wonderful thing. I'm so glad that you all were not afraid, you know, in order to do what we had to do. And, you know, I want to say thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mr. Magic, for coming through tonight and calling, not being afraid to ask your questions to Tina. And you know, I think that one thing that's really important about healthcare is that, you know, we get knowledge because knowledge is power. You know, knowledge is what's going to allow us to go to that next level and just to make sure we have a longer life and a healthier life. You know, it's just really important. So at this time, what I'm going to do is we're going to take a quick break, and I will be right back. And, you know, since we're talking about women, we're going to talk about putting yourself first. This is one of my favorite songs from Jaheim, Put That Woman First, one of my absolute favorite songs from him. Put yourself first. Stop worrying so much about the kids and everyone else. You got to do you sometimes. So here we are. We'll be right back, you guys, after these quick messages.
My truck, and if it came in a sack, no stems, no seeds in a bag, and if it ripped from my wrist and it looked like it shined like new, then but oh yeah, I forgot to be a lover. If it wasn't for the 9 to 5 doubled up overtime, then it wasn't really nothing. what's up, always running.
So many games.
All that I've
missed.
I need you today.
Always in first.
Even though sometimes from a second.
If I know God.
You know I had to learn a lesson.
Every time.
Put it to work.
If for better or worse.
Always put that on the side.
Bring it up.
Y'all better put that woman first. I just asked a question to my listeners in the chat room, since the majority of them are men. I wanted to know, do they put their woman first? And I got a response, always. I got another one, I put us first. If I put her first, she may lose respect. Y'all is crazy. The House of Monroe said that one, and always said magic. Gogo 14, do you put your woman first? Everybody answered but you. You know, this is an awesome show. I just want to say that I do appreciate the fact that we're coming forth and we are actually speaking out on health care. And I just want for each of you to make sure that you go to the doctor, get your checkup, because it's important. Also, too, this Thursday we're going to have a follow-up show to Gino, who's the Latin songbird. Gino has collaborated with Smokey Diggler, who was formerly in the group. Actually, Playa still is doing their thing. If any of you remember that song, remember the group Playa that had it was three. It was actually a trio. And then Static Major, many of you know, passed. Static Major was on the song Lollipop with Lil Wayne. And so, you know, they're a phenomenal group and just a classic. Then we also, he's also worked with Busy Bone from Bone Thugs and Harmony. And so he will be here this Thursday. We're going to try to catch him again. He tried to call in last time, and what ended up happening was that he was in Paris and had problems calling in. So it didn't work out. But we do have another special show on the Bishop Eddie Long follow-up part three. We're going to have my personal girlfriend, Raquel Love, come back and tell her part two of the story in regards to how the church treated her after she had confessed and actually asked for therapy and so forth when she had got molested in the church. We're going to talk about that because this is a very controversial issue with the church and molestation and just, you know, how it's hidden, you know, and especially in the black church, homosexuality and molestation, all that stuff is crazy, you know. And, yeah, I said Playa, Mr. Magic. Uh-huh. Yep, they from Louisville. Uh-huh. Playa, that's right. Yep. Well, Playa won't be in the building. He worked with Playa. Gino, the Latin bird, worked with Playa. He's not a part of the group, but he's done some collaborations with them, and he'll be here this Thursday. Goga answered my question. I tried to do the right thing as far as putting his woman first. That's beautiful. I'm glad all of you men are, y'all sound like some good men out there. Y'all taking care of your woman, and that's awesome to hear that. So blessings to each and every one of you. But definitely this Sunday at 10, we're also going to have Teresa come forth. Teresa is actually affiliated with a law firm, and she's going to give us the legal aspect of the Bishop Eddie Long case on Sunday. So we're going to have one who was a victim of someone that was in the church and a family member. Then we're also going to have, I don't know if Teresa's a lawyer or a paralegal or what type of work she does. We're certainly going to find that out. She came to the show this past Sunday and was not able to really get what she wanted to say out because her cell phone had died and she left her charger at work. So Teresa will be has been invited back to the show because she's stating that the burden of proof lays on Bishop Eddie Long, whereas a lot of my listeners disagreed last week. They felt like the burden of proof laid on the plaintiff to prove that he was guilty. So this is going to be another heated topic as we chop it up in regards to that. Mr. Magic, I'd love for you to come to that show because I know you're going to set it off. I know you're going to set it off. If you listen to the archive segments, it was off the chain these last few shows we've had on Bishop Eddie Long. It's always some kind of fight or something gets boiling and some type of dispute always sets off when we have these juicy topics about the Bishop Eddie Long story. But, yes, so all of y'all, make sure you mark your calendars for that. Follow me on Twitter, Brown Sugar Radio. Also, too, on Facebook, Brown Sugar Radio Show. That's Sugar, S-U-G-A. All right? Well, I just want to say thank you all so much for tuning in to Brown Sugar Radio, the live show on the Internet. Y'all come back through every Tuesday and Thursday, and definitely we will see you again soon. So be blessed, and the quote that I have for tonight, if you're having a setback, don't step back, because God is planning your comeback. Be blessed and have a fantastic night.
Brown Sugar Radio.
Brown Sugar Radio.
That's where it's happening. That's where it's the most impressive show.
On Internet Radio.
Brown Sugar Radio. You don't want to miss a segment of excitement.
We have the hottest celebrities, interviews, and gossip. Breathtaking topics. The latest fashion.
Health and beauty tips.
Underground hip-hop and R&B.
And artists to make you groove. And the best fans to chat with.
Come and chill with your girl Brown Sugar every Tuesday and Thursday evening at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
I'm gonna take my